the system that we're proposing is actually to provide early warning system days before it happens. So it can tell them, actually, I think this pig might be ill in 4 or 5 days, even before it happens.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of 4 clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development.
Welcome to the Swinet Canada podcast show, brought to you by Wisenetics. So we are dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the Canadian pork industry. So my name is Miranda Smith, and I'll be the host for today's episode. And today's guest is Ali Alamir from the University of Salford in Manchester, United Kingdom. So we're going to talk today about AI, but not artificial insemination, which is what most pork producers will think about when they hear AI. We're going to talk about the other AI, artificial intelligence. So Ali, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So before we get started on AI, can you first give us a little bit of an introduction of yourself and like your background and how you ended up in your current position?
Sure. So my background, as you stated, is mainly artificial intelligence. It's actually purely artificial intelligence. I got a PhD at Newcastle University in the United Kingdom in England in 2018. And that is purely machine vision, artificial intelligence, developing models that look at the scene and make sense of it. So you have a camera, look at the environment, and then make sense. This is a cup, this is a phone, this is whatever happening in the scene, and make processes quickly accordingly. Then after that, when I finished my PhD, I was open to take all these kind of knowledge that I had from my PhD to solve complex real-world problems. And that's when I started my first postdoctoral position. And that was also at Newcastle University. And the position was interesting because, and this is what I love about these kind of project, which is very interdisciplinary. So the position was mainly to do precision pig farming. So all about pigs and their health and welfare, but applying machine vision and AI to somehow enhance the health and welfare and creating an early warning systems that detects any compromises and health. We'll go into details of that piece of research maybe later. But then I moved to Queen's University, Belfast, in Northern Ireland, for another postdoctoral position and continued that kind of research. So also taking the knowledge of AI and machine vision and doing other pieces of work to do with tail biting detection and other kind of problems in the industry. And then here, University of Salford, as a lecturer, but here is purely AI position, but I'm continuing my network, working with leading researchers in Europe and in the UK to do research on detecting problems, behaviors of animals, mainly on pigs, but I'm also doing other pieces of work now with the University of Bristol on cows and other kind of behavior. So that's a small introduction about my background.
Perfect. Yeah. I think when people hear artificial intelligence and pigs, like they probably wonder what do they have in common or, you know, but you already explained it a little bit, like you're looking at behavior. So can you talk a little bit about your most recent work with AI and machine vision and how to monitor pig behavior using those systems?
Yeah, so the story is almost the same with every piece of research that I've have done since 10 years ago. The story is the same. So you have pixels, cameras, looking at the scene, which is pixels, which is the same story of machine vision in general. And from that, you extract as much information as possible from animals, pigs, and pens. So first of all, the technology is non-invasive. So some of the practices that exist in Europe or in China require some kind of sensors attached to animals to then track them and get information, estimating their postures and stuff. So what I like about this technology is that it is fully non-invasive. So you just have the camera hooked up at the ceiling of the pen, and it monitors tens of animals at the same time and provide these kind of data about them real time or retrospectively. So yeah, so this is the main kind of picture, but I'm doing this in many ways. It's getting more complicated now. The more AI is becoming more sophisticated and more advanced, the kind of behaviors that I'm now doing in my current research is getting also as advanced as that. So the last piece of research is one of my PhD students actually done, is also using transformer model. So transformer models are very recent machine vision models. The idea is inspired by actually by ChatGPT itself. So it's, in AI, you have two fields, two main fields, machine vision and natural language processing. So whenever you hear machine vision, it's cameras, pixels, images. Whenever you hear natural language processing, it's text. It's ChatGPT kind of technology. And they both work hand in hand, these two fields. One field take ideas from the other. So that's how this is interesting, because vision transformer is almost copying some of the attention mechanism and some of the methods used for natural language processing. So in that, we use these kind of technologies on pigs to detect kind of behaviors related to contact and other kind of behaviors in pigs, and extract behaviors. Other pieces of work with the university, with SRUC, which is in Edinburgh in Scotland. I can't give much more details because the piece of research is not published yet. But what we've done for them here is tracking their pigs and providing them with metrics regarding what's the total distance travel, what the speed of each pig traveling, and they're doing some kind of research to determine hierarchy between pigs and dominance, and seeing and researching how genetically some of the pigs don't know when to retreat and other kind of details like that. I'm not an expert of that, so they just give me the data and expect me to do the kind of stuff they want to do from them. But it's very interesting because this kind of knowledge is not, so yeah, it's pigs, but then now I have another piece of work with the University of Bristol, which is to do with cows, and kind of the same kind of algorithms and same kind of methodology, and to do other kind of stuff with cows. But yeah, there's a lot of other research that we're applying now with big institutions to get fundings, but I can't go into details, but it's also more advanced kind of behaviors of individual pigs or sows and getting information about more kind of subtle behaviors and more details about what they do.
Yeah, so can you give some examples of behaviors that you can pick up? Because like I know several researchers who are working on similar things, and they're still working on just trying to figure out if a pig is standing or laying down. So it sounds like you're doing a bit more than that.
Yeah. So it started with these kind of behaviors, started with getting behaviors such as standing, and also with the lying. What type of lying? Is it lying lateral? Is it sternally lying? The feeding behavior, there's another behavior. So usually we have conversation with animal behavior scientists, and they're like, we're interested to automate this kind of behavior. And one of the behavior was non-nutritious visit. This is when the pigs go to the feeding trough, but not necessarily feed. And it was of interest to my animal scientist colleagues. Other behaviors was the contact. So whenever one pig's head is in contact with another pig's tail, we also automated detection for that. We talked about lying lateral, drinking behavior, how much they drink. Also the total distance travel, the speed they travel with, and the most exciting part of that is that you get all these kind of metrics for each individual pig's long term. So you end up with one inexpensive camera put on the top of the ceiling of a pen. You end up with profiles for each individual pig, telling them information about it. And actually, I'm going to reveal my next funding idea for it. It's actually a large language model that sit on top of that, where you can have a conversation literally about your pig. Tell me what pig number one is doing. Tell me what to. So farmers don't necessarily anymore end up with these massive CSV files, which tells them what pigs are and which pig it is. They can literally have a conversation, such as what's happening with ChatGPT about their pigs, and can tell them what they can do, what kind of practices they can do to enhance. But this is far in the future. But the stuff I've done is mainly that, yeah.
So that's very interesting. So like farmers might be wondering, you know, how can this apply to me? So clearly we're not quite there yet that it's ready for commercial farms, but like, what would you say, like what the future might look like for producers?
Yeah, basically it's really within sight, because I myself have lucky to have worked in both fields of AI, which is machine vision and natural language processing. And I have several projects in natural language processing to develop large language model to do other stuff with the insurance sector. I have a big project actually, and with another company to do with court system transcribing, another kind of big project to do purely with natural language processing and large language model. So literally providing a large language model that help companies to handle claimants for insurance and detecting fraud. And the main important piece of this work is ethics, of course, making sure it doesn't discriminate and doesn't have biases to some of the protected areas. Well, that's outside the kind of the theme of this podcast. So yeah, but I took these kind of ideas and I'm like, why don't we actually take these large language models and then embed them in a friendly way, in a graphically friendly way to farmers, and then it can tell farmers anything they need to know about their animals. So you look at your pigs and it tells you pig number X is doing X and Y and Z. That's how it's behaved in the last 7 days. This is maybe a problem. So that's, again, feedback to the research, which I also done in the past, which is to do with creating an early warning systems. So the whole idea of crafting and quantifying these behaviors is not just for the sake of quantifying them. The idea is to actually develop an early warning system in which this behavior or the anomaly of this behavior can precede clinical symptoms and can tell you that actually there's a problem with this pig. Maybe do something now rather than waiting for the problem to escalate. Similarly with tail biting and similarly with other research. So the idea is getting the behavior to save a lot of money for farmers for whatever problems they have. Because what I understood working in this industry, each farm has its own kind of problems, its own kind of challenges. So whatever problems farmer might have in their own kind of practice, AI can come and save a lot if the problem is actually costing a lot of money, which can be tail biting and other kind of problems. So yeah, that's why we get the behavior. But yeah, on top of that, when large language models sit on top of that, that's when it becomes a conversation with the animals, literally, not a conversation, it's a one-side conversation. So the farmer have like information about their animals as much as possible and getting these kind of data that can tell them what's going on and stuff.
That'll be very interesting. So basically, a producer can just ask the system which of my animals might be getting sick, for example.
Yes, basically.
Because like right now, quite often we'll have to wait until the animal stops eating. But usually there's already reduced activity before they stop eating, right? So you're saying like your system would probably be able to pick up on that.
Yeah, basically. So the system that we're proposing is actually to provide early warning system days before it happens. So it can tell them, actually, I think this pig might be ill in 4 or 5 days. Even before it happens. So maybe do something now rather than... So that's how we actually validate this system. When we create all these kind of trials, we always have data. For example, we took data from Denmark, we took data from Ireland, England. What we do is we know there's a problem with the data. We know there's, for example, some pigs will have problems, whether digestive problem, whether respiratory problems. And we develop these system retrospectively, and then we test. So we know with day zero is the day that the pigs are going to exhibit the, or actually they have the actual health problem. So we develop the systems to look at the historical data, train them on these historical data. And then whenever it happens in the future, from these historical data, because that's what AI is all about, learning about these patterns of behaviors. So you first detect the behaviors, and then the patterns of behaviors you use as another stage to then give an early warning system to specific problems, let's say. So there are some problems to do with tail biting or digestive problem or respiratory problems or whatever problems that may be. And the combination of how these behaviors change, let's say the way they're lying plus the way they're eating or they're drinking or they're feeding, is in a way showing an anomaly which relates to a problem relating to a respiratory disease or something like this.
So it's really interesting to me. But like, what would you say motivated this research?
I like the non-invasiveness aspect to it. I know I've been to a lot of conferences, and I listen to a lot of animal welfare kind of experts in the field, which is fully against this kind of way of farming, which is actually I'm more on their side than the side that I do research with. But well, at least when we're in this research and we end up with a world full of precision livestock farming and full of these kind of artificial farms, at least this technology is not adding more sensors to the animals and adding more kind of invasive ear tags or whatever kind of practices. It's just a camera that put in the somewhere and just monitors a lot of animals without actually invasively touching them. And I believe this is definitely is the future. I think it's gonna do kind of miracles in the field, machine vision applied to animals, because it's very easy from a machine vision perspective, because I do a lot of machine vision research applied to humans, applied to surveillance, applied to a lot of things. But with animals it's much easier than these, because you have animals in an enclosed space. They can't go anywhere in the way in the end. And the camera is monitoring them. So it's just a matter of getting a good kind of methodology, a good kind of sophisticated algorithm that sit behind this camera and do the kind of stuff it needs to do. So I believe it's a matter of time before it becomes the most kind of standard way of monitoring animals.
So how does the system recognize different pigs? Like, do they have to put like numbers on their backs or something, or does it just recognize slightly different appearances?
That's really a good question. Because we forgot to talk about the tracking, and the tracking in this industry from the machine vision side is the most exciting and most difficult task. And that's what we used to do, actually, years ago. This is how we used to do it. We have the number or marking on pigs, and then from these kind of markings, it's like, in a way, you cheat your way into the system, which I don't prefer. All my research since 5 or 6 years ago, no marking is involved in it. So, yeah, because markings, again, is touching the animal, adding this labor, adding, because the marking as well get erased, or there are a lot of problems with markings that we don't want to add to the complexity, because these systems should do the things by themselves. So, yeah, they're now, they're in machine vision, something called foundation models, which just came recently to the field, and they provide state-of-the-art tracking algorithm. One of the model called SAM2 model, segment anything model. And this is excellent. We applied it to a lot of our research data, and it's given us state of the art. We literally don't lose the animal anymore. So once you track your animal, that's it. You don't lose it. there's occasions where you lose the animals is that, so when I said about the field as being easy, is that you have the camera looking at your pigs. They don't leave the field of vision, and that's when it becomes easy. You can never lose their ID if you have a good tracking algorithm. And we have achieved now 99.5% multiple object tracking accuracy, which is the standard metrics for tracking animals using these. But when you lose them, there are methods for re-identification. So for example, let's say the pen is too big that it cannot be covered with one camera. So you try then to have two cameras or three cameras to, so for example, one of the data we have six cameras in cows to cover one pen. And in that case, there are other algorithms that sit within the SAM, within the tracking algorithm, that can then map the field of view of each camera, such as the homography. I don't want to bore your listeners with a lot of the terms from machine vision size, but all I was trying to say is that there are algorithms that now we're working on, we're solving almost the field of tracking. So there are two challenges when it comes to machine vision applied to animals. Tracking, which is excellently highlighted by you, your question. So you want to track your animals for days and months. It's not good to come up with an algorithm that say, oh, I can track the animals for 30 minutes and then I lose it. That will be of no practical use to anybody from the animal behavior side. They want to have consistent tracking for days and weeks to know what's happening to their animals one by one. And the other one is behavior. So the two challenges, behavior is almost solved now, depending on which behavior. But now the algorithm that I published, for example, it does very high accuracy to detect these kind of behaviors that we talked about. But the tracking is the interesting one. So you want both of these to work in order to have a system that actually inform farmers about what's going on.
So would you say like the systems that you use and that you have developed, are they like public domain, or are you working with someone to commercialize this, or like what does that look like?
There's very little commercialization going on. So it was research we've done a long time ago, and it's all public domain. Yeah. So most of the pieces of research I've done is all published, and the code is publicly available. So anybody from my side of the field, once they see a paper published, they know what I'm doing. So when I say, for example, when I did a piece of work in 2018 and used, there's a model called YOLO, You Only Look Once, version 2, they automatically know if they want to replicate the paper one, this paper, they need to use YOLO V11 because YOLO went from version 2 to now version 11. And of course, version 11 will give you even better performance than the paper that I published. So that's the challenge when it comes to my field, because the literature is very quickly updated, like it's very quickly progressing. So when I write a proposal, and I'm now writing many proposals, the thing I write a month ago, I have to update everything now, and I will update everything in a month time, because it is really challenging in terms of keeping up. So yeah, so if I did a piece of research and published in 2020, the algorithm is the same, the way it works is the same. Whoever want to deploy it later, they need to, for their own sake, they need to take a recent version of whatever model we developed to make it even work better. But yeah, they're all public domain. The ideas of them are not that kind of complicated, because these algorithms in machine vision, they're publicly available. They've been tested on human, on a lot of things. It just needs somebody who know these algorithms, familiar with, and just apply them in the same way or develop them in the same way we did them. And the data set is available as well, so they can use also annotated data set and stuff like this to use these.
So yeah, you say like you just need to put it, use it in pigs, but like, I know that there's a lot that goes into that, right? Like to train the system, how much footage or how many pictures do you need? Like it's thousands, right?
That is correct, yeah. So this is, again, a challenge within the field. So I think it's inevitable from people from that domain, they need an AI kind of expert or specialist to be involved in the piece of research. I examined a lot of PhD students who are doing it by themselves, and we found some kind of gap in their implementations. Because they, so for example, you have a PhD student who's fully from the animal behavior side, doing a PhD about using computer vision, and they end up spending 3 years of their PhD just learning about computer vision. And in the end, the product has a lot of problems, especially with validation. Validation is an important one. You want to validate your machine vision system in a very strict way, where you scrutinize it, you show it example from other farms, other pens, to then say, actually, I have a good machine vision system that does X and Y and Z. You can't just validate it not a good machine learning practice and do that. So yeah, when you develop a machine vision system, you're expected to have a lot of data, annotated data. There's a lot of them now available online. I myself, my previous research, most of the data is thousands of images labeled. It's available online. There's other researchers putting a lot of data now online. So the problem of data is no longer a bottleneck, but still, because if you need to validate to your specific data, then you need to annotate yourself. And that's a pain where everybody in the field has to go through, because there's no way of validating your system without having a manually kind of annotated data to actually prove that the system can do the job in your own farm. And from my years of experience in the field, and I read a lot of research proposals actually from Canada as well, and sometimes I reject these proposals because they write this amazing proposal, but they forget to validate. So they say, we're using this kind of machine vision system that's already developed and tested and validated in X and Y and Z. We're just going to apply it to our farm. And that's no good. You need kind of a little work package to just validate to your own data, making sure actually the system that you're deploying from X company or Y company actually works well on your farm and how well it works. Because these systems also, once they've been published or work, they give you, let's say, 90% accuracy. So they're not 100% accurate. Then when it works on your farm, I would expect it to go 80%. So we need this kind of number or metric to actually, because there's the other field that I work in now called AI trust. And that's very important, because if farmers don't trust their AI, then what's the use of it? If they always suspect AI decisions, then there's no use. If you want to deploy a good AI system, it should be trustworthy. You should trust this kind of decision making. Then you can take it from there into real-world practice.
That makes a lot of sense. And I like what you're saying about like PhD students spending 3 years of their time trying to learn about AI and then still ending up with something that doesn't quite work. So it kind of goes to show like how important it is for collaboration. Because like at the same time, I think you need the collaboration of the animal welfare people to tell you what the system is actually seeing, right? Because like that's not your expertise. Your expertise is telling the system like, okay, this is what we're seeing. But you kind of need both worlds to come together to create this system.
Yeah. And nothing makes me more happier than getting a contact from universities, from people from the other side saying, oh, we have this data. Can you help us do X and Y and Z? And we have these kind of interesting conversations about how we can take this kind of collaboration forward. It is sad that there are not many people in the world that have the synergy, like they have the machine AI, the AI kind of background and the kind of livestock animal farming. Because I would love to see a lot of these synergy going on, because this is the future. If you want to invest, this is where you should invest your future. You have a camera that does anything you wanna invest in. I'm not saying that. I hope I'm not projecting the idea that human is not required in the loop, because that's my research is exactly the opposite from that. Human is still required, but it could aid farmers or whoever is in the practice to make better decisions, to understand more about their animals, to just make them work better with their animals rather than saying, oh, reduce all the animals and replace them with a silicon and it will do the job for you. Because that's not at all is what this research is all about.
Okay, so we'll still need farmers. We'll just provide them with tools to make their job a little easier.
100%.
Okay.
It's time for our famous three.
Why Zenetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to become the gold standard in your field, visit WiseZenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Perfect. Okay, so I think that's a good place to end it. So then we have usually three final questions. So we'll go to that now. So the first one is, what is your favorite, and maybe like you're not into the swine industry, so maybe I'll change this to, what is your favorite AI-related book or resource?
Actually, whether AI or swine, because I have a PhD student now who's doing research on AI applied to actually swine. So in a way, I have both. And actually, my resource is my students, even a master degree student who I supervise their projects, or even research assistants that I have. I find like I read a lot of books, I read a lot of papers, I peer review papers, but the most kind of resource of up-to-date, good information is when you interact with my PhD students or RAs. They have this interesting kind of view about how to solve problems, and they're literally my best resource. Anything I do, I go to them. What do you think about X and Y and Z? And they can be critical, and this make you think twice about, especially with AI, because the literature is going very fast forward. So it's always nice to have a team around you that actually give you up-to-date knowledge, or they can challenge your idea, or they can transform the way anybody think.
That's a very interesting answer. I think some people will say that another person is their resource, but I've never had anyone say it's their PhD students or even their master's students. But I think it makes sense in your field a bit more than in ours, because your field goes so fast that the PhD students probably are the ones that are most on top of all the new developments.
Yeah, they're very excited about it as well. The excitement, I mean, they're new development every day in the field. And I think it's impossible for one person sitting in a room and just updating themselves about every kind of AI developments that's happening in the field. So in these kind of way, you need a big team of researchers, of individuals to keep actually nudging you. So I teach, for example, the deep learning module here at the University of Salford for master degree students. And you have a big cohort of students. Sometimes you get the one student asking a question that I myself don't know about, which prompt me to go then and do research about whatever question I had, because I don't want to come across as behind the literature. And that's how I find it very exciting, because they're going to always keep you up to date with what's going on. And they want to learn. They come to study AI. They want to be at the forefront of cutting edge technologies, and they want to learn these things. So yeah, I find it interesting. I created actually a GitHub repository for them, so they can also themselves contribute to the teaching and add codes and materials to aid their own learning.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. So the next question is, what is your favorite book or resource outside of, AI and swine?
I would say there are a lot of books on AI bias and fairness and ethics in AI, because that's actually my main now line of research. And there's a book called The Weapon of Math Destruction. And that is a very interesting, it's very eye-opener. It's all to do with how AI, everybody's excited about AI, but nobody thinks of the consequences of AI. AI is proven to be, every piece of research we're doing, AI is biased, AI is unfair, AI discriminate against minorities, against a lot of things. All the system we've done almost that we did investigation to, we find that. So yeah, I'm very excited about the field of ethics and AI. I got several funded projects to work on these, and the problem seems to be getting even more and more complicated than reaching actually a solution. So people need to know about how AI can be biased, can be unfair. They need to have whoever uses AI. We talked about PhD students. for example, learning AI to do it a piece, but they need to know that the data has to be well kind of balanced, well kind of representative, because if the data that anyone uses to train an AI is not representative enough, the AI itself become unfair or biased against some kind of demographic within that data. And that applies actually to also to pigs. So if you, that's why I said, for example, if a company X do their product on this farm or that farm, you need to actually investigate it in your farm, because that's when AI bias also play a role in that, because it's biased to do the task very well to the farms they develop it in, but you don't know how well it will do when you it faces challenges that you have in your own farm. It can be the pig species, it can be the gender, it can be anything.
Interesting. Okay. And then the last question is, in your opinion, what sets successful professionals apart from those that are not?
Adaptability, I think, is that. So, you need to be adaptable to whatever's coming, whatever advancement, whatever ideas is coming. You need to always take your research. If you work on that field or if you do a practice in a certain way, maybe keeping an open mind about and adapt to a new ideas and a new thinking.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So thanks so much for joining me on the Swinet Canada podcast show today.
Thanks very much.
So that concludes another episode. And thanks everyone for joining. So don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review, because your feedback is invaluable to us. So until next time, this is Miranda Smith from the Swinet Canada podcast show, signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.